Toronto proud to announce from Zurich, Men's League Switzerland, from U.S. program, Austin Matthews.
Austin Matthews opens the scoring. Welcome to the NHL.
The Winnipeg Jets are proud to select from Tappara of the Finnish Elite League, Patrick Laine.
Handsome around the horn, Laine hits shot, scores! First NHL goal, Patrick Laine.
Columbus Blue Jackets are proud to select from Cape Breton, Screaming Eagles, Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Vesnikov, a drop pass to Dubois. Dubois cutting to the front of the net. They score! Dubois!
From Karpat in Finland, Jesse Puljujärvi.
Turnover. There's a shot. Pieti scores!
With the fifth selection, Vancouver select from the London Knights, Ole Juolevi.
Pieti shot. Scores! Juolevi.
All eyes on the NHL draft in Chicago. This is the Prospect Project 2017 with Jeff Merrick.
Here we are again. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the third edition of the Prospects Project podcast. There you go. Say that one three times fast. If you haven't seen it, our draft rankings for November are up now at our website, sportsnet.ca/top31. You can keep that bookmarked. It'll change every month. A couple of things to point out on this list. I want to talk about some players who have jumped up and jumped out since the October list was published. We'll start with Nolan Patrick of the Brandon Wheat Kings. We still have him in at number one, despite the quote-unquote upper body injury. Still no timetable for the right-hand shot center's return, but based on past performance and a high ceiling, it'll be tough to knock him off that top perch. But stranger things at the draft have happened. Some good news on the Timothy Liljegren front. He's been sidelined with mononucleosis all season. And if you're listening to this podcast on Wednesday, November the 9th, he's making his long-awaited season debut tonight for Rögle's U20 team. This will be his first game in 2 months. Mono is tough. It saps your strength. He's very much looking forward to getting back to action this evening. The comparisons for Liljegren usually start around Drew Doughty. He's a smooth skating defenseman with the ability to go end-to-end with the puck. And with every NHL team looking for their D-man to join just about every rush, he has many of the commodities every team in the NHL are looking for. Gabriel Vilardi. By the way, we still have Liljegren at number two. Gabriel Vilardi, the Windsor winger, moves up to number three. Based on strong play on the Windsor Spitfire's top line, as we've mentioned before, Vilardi is playing out of position in his draft year. He's a natural center. But that hasn't hampered his performance at all. And for those who want something to think about, consider this for the draft. Gabriel Vilardi is a full 11 months younger than top prospect Nolan Patrick. We've maintained all along that Vilardi has the potential to go number two. But with Windsor hosting the Memorial Cup, scouts will get plenty of viewings, as many as 100 on Vilardi. So let's see how high this young man can climb. Eli Tolvanen of Sioux City of the USHL, we've moved up to number four. Goals are tough to come by at just about any level of hockey. And Tolvanen, who many call the Finnish Tarasenko, is a pure sniper. He may have the best shot in this year's entire class of prospects. Speaking of the USHL, this very well may be a breakthrough and breakout draft for that U.S. junior loop. It looks like three players will go in the first round with Tolvanen, Casey Mittelstadt of Green Bay. He's, by the way, heading back to high school, not unlike Dallas first-rounder Riley Tufte did last season. And Shane Bowers of Waterloo, he's headed to BU next season. We have Mittelstadt ranked at number 9. We have Bowers at 20. And even to get ahead of ourselves, watch out for Andrei Svechnikov of Muskegon to be a high pick in 2018. His brother Yevgeny Svechnikov was, of course, a first-round draft pick of the Detroit Red Wings. The Mississauga Steelheads have two in our top 10, with the shoot-first Owen Tippett and hulking defender Nick Hague coming in at 5 and 10, respectively. The Quebec Major Junior Hockey League has a pair in our top 10 as well. Swiss-born Halifax Mooseheads rookie Nico Hischier, who already has a 6-point game in his hip pocket. That is a Mooseheads rookie record, by the way. And Victoriaville's Maxime Comtois, who got out to a slow start this season, mainly due to trying to achieve too much with all the injuries the team started with this season. There are many who compare Comtois with Columbus prospect Pierre-Luc Dubois, who went third overall in last year's draft. We have Heischer ranked 6th. We have Comtois in at number 7. Still some Russian presence in our top 10 as well, with Klim Kostin, who's looked really good in 2 games into the Canada-Russia series so far. He can beat you with both skill and size. One question do have about him is his speed. He can get around just fine. He can keep up just fine. But does he have that next level of speed that for many is necessary in the pro game? This guy is all skill. He's been a delight to watch so far in the Canada-Russia series. A few other notes and some prospects from the past month. At the U24 Nations in Gothenburg, it looks like Sweden found a new line for the World Junior Hockey Championships in Toronto and Montreal over the Christmas holidays. Leafs prospect Carl Grundstrom, along with a pair of draft eligibles, Elias Pettersson and Elias Andersson, led the tournament each with 7 points. We have Pettersson ranked 19th. We have Andersson in at 21. Miro Heiskanen, we should point out as well, had a wonderful 4 Nations as well. We have him just outside the first round. Don't be surprised if come December he slides into the first round. And Erik Brännström, perhaps this year's version of Samuel Girard, has been ripping it up. The smallish blue liner should probably be playing in the top league for HV71, but they're stacked on the blue line, so he's playing on the U20 team instead. End-to-end highlight goals. He's been outstanding. We have Erik Brännström ranked at number 15. All right, to the podcast. On this edition of the podcast, Alex DeBrincat of the Erie Otters joins us. DeBrincat had a huge week signing his first NHL contract, a 3-year entry-level deal with the Chicago Blackhawks, who selected him in the second round, 39th overall. He also picked up CHL Player of the Week honors after registering 11 points in 3 games. We'll get more into the Canada-Russia series with our lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet, Sam Cosentino. We'll talk about some of the names we expect to be called in June that are featured in this Canada-Russia series. We'll also get Sam's thoughts on who stood out after a couple of games. And Ryan Wagman of Hockey Prospectus drops by to discuss who's really done a good job shoring up their prospect depth around the NHL. We'll now turn our attention to the CHL Player of the Week. His name is Alex DeBrincat. He plays with the Erie Otters. He put up 11 points in 3 games to win him the CHL Player of the Week honors. And oh yeah, just signed his entry-level contract with the Chicago Blackhawks of the NHL. Alex, that was quite a week. Safe to say, one of the biggest of your career?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember on that CHL Player of the Week, so it's pretty exciting for me, but definitely couldn't have done it without my line mates and even my teammates. You know, we played a great 3 games, and I think a lot of credit goes to them on that.
So take us back to your draft then. That's always a huge deal, obviously, for a hockey player. Take us back to everything sort of surrounding those couple of days last year. You got picked in the second round by the Chicago Blackhawks. There were some rumors that Florida might have been interested in the first round to grab you. I'm sure you talked to a lot of teams, and you might have had a feeling a certain way about some of them. Did it surprise you that it was Chicago? What was the experience all like for you?
Signing the first contract, that was also a really exciting time for me. And, going into the draft, like you said, I had no idea where I was going to go. And I'm really happy it turned out to be Chicago. Such a great organization, and the way they develop their players is second to none. So really happy I ended up there.
It's kind of appropriate, too. You went to Lake Forest as well, and that's in Illinois. So it's sort of appropriate, I suppose, that Chicago grabs you?
Yeah, I think so. Spent some time there going to school and went to 1 or 2 Hawks games, but I don't think I was cheering for the Hawks then, but now it's pretty great. A lot of my friends are Blackhawks fans, and it's cool to go there.
What was your first camp like?
It was different, it's a lot faster, it's just a little bit different style of hockey, but it was really fun seeing all those guys that played in the NHL and just kind of learning from them as you go. It's something that I think I really used to my advantage, and just seeing what they do every day on and off the ice, it was a good experience for me.
Is that one of the things you noticed right away, just that the speed level is that much faster and everything has to be done that much more quickly?
Yeah, I mean, everyone plays a smarter game, so the time you have with the pocket is definitely cut down, and you have to think a lot quicker than normal. So I don't know if the speed level was that much faster, but definitely just the ability of the players and the smartness of them, it just cuts down the time you have to puck, for sure.
Now, your shot is one of your calling cards. I mean, it's elite. Back-to-back 50-goal seasons in the OHL, maybe another one on the horizon, and you'll be catching a record set by Dale McCourt back in the 70s with 350-goal seasons in the OHL. Is that something that's always come naturally to you, having that great shot, or is that something you've worked on for a number of years?
I mean, I've worked on it a lot, but I don't think all of it's me working on it. I think certain parts of it come natural, you know. When I was younger, I'd always shoot pucks in the basement or outside, and just before I came to the OHL, it was a big thing for me to get my release better. So whenever I had a chance, I'd just work on quick release, because, I mean, it's obviously harder for the goalies to react if you have a quick shot, and I think that's one of the reasons I've had such success.
Yeah, how much? There's a lot of guys now that will work on, you know, they'll go to skills camps in the off season to work on, you know, hiding the puck, you know, changing up the release, whether it's, you know, white ice shooting, top grip, bottom grip, all these fancy ways now to disguise a shot and to disguise the puck. How much time do you spend working on that skill specifically? Because, you know, as I mentioned, you know, from your draft class in the OHL right now, it's amongst one of the more elite shots going.
Yeah, I mean, I spend all the time I can, really. If I have any extra time when I'm skating in the summer, I'll definitely work on that. I mean, like I said, that's kind of why I've been successful so far. So just getting that much better can make me a better player and have a better shot. So I think I work on that a lot, but also need to work on the other things in my game too. So pretty evenly spread out the way I work on it. And, but that is something I focus on.
You've played with some high-end guys as well. I mean, you played with Connor McDavid. You've played with Dylan Strome. What are some of the things you've picked up from them?
Just the way they think the game and the way they're doing everything at top speed. I know Connor is one of the fastest skaters I've ever seen. So him doing everything he does at top speed is something I kind of picked up in my first year and just kind of tried to do myself. Obviously, I don't do it as well as him, but yeah, definitely from him, it's a big thing to do everything at top speed. And Dylan, he slows it down to his own pace, but he's also so smart. So he lets the game come to him, and he can make any play he wants. So I think they're two different style players, and me playing with both of them kind of helped my development out, I think, being able to play with both styles.
You know, when I look at Connor McDavid and even now watching him with the Edmonton Oilers, one of the things that I'm always blown away by, and you got a front row seat for this playing in the OHL with him, those straight line crossovers that he does to accelerate so quickly. Give us a sense of how tough that is to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely tough, and he's the best I've ever seen at it for sure. It's something you got to work on all the time, really. You know, when you're in practice, you got to work on it, because it definitely... It kind of tricks the D. He doesn't know which way you're going to go, and it really is deceptive. So he's definitely the best I've ever seen at that, and I think it's a lot harder than it looks.
It looks difficult, although you're right, just to a casual viewer, to say, wow, he's going fast, I wonder why. Wow, he might just be a fast hockey player. You played a lot of wing, and you've also played center as well. The last game that I saw with the Erie Otters, you were playing in the middle with Kyle Maksimovic and Taylor Radish. More comfortable on the wing, or do you like playing in the middle?
You know, it doesn't really matter for me. I mean, I play both, so I think it's good for me to be versatile like that and be able to be wherever my coach needs me at that point. So I think either is fine with me, but I think a big part of a good player's game is he's able to be versatile.
Mm-hmm. When did, at what age, Alex, did you start to see scouts, you know, knocking on your dressing room door to ask the coach to talk to you? At what point did agents start coming around and ask to talk to you and your family? At what point did it really start to get real for you?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, midget minor was a year where there were a lot of scouts around the rinks. Playing in Detroit, it's a hockey hotbed, really, for... Yeah. And the scouts, so they were around a lot, not too much looking at me, I don't think, but really my late fourth year when Perry Bassing came to my locker room and was talking to me. That was probably maybe the first real experience of anything that real, I think. So him, and then first year in the OHL playing with Connor and Dylan, scouts at every game. So I think those few years were the years that it really started to build up.
That's an interesting point, too. I mean, you were never drafted into the OHL. You know, Sherwood Bastin loves to tell a story of how he found Alex DeBrincat and kept him away from everybody and made sure that you signed with the Erie Otters. Is that a story that you end up talking to a lot of younger kids about? You know, this idea that even if you're not drafted into a league, you can still be successful. You know, Alex, you were never drafted into the OHL, and here you are, a second-round draft pick of one of the best franchises in the last 10 years in the NHL.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I can keep confidence in a few kids that aren't drafted, you know, then I'm happy. You know, not everyone's drafted, and not everyone can go on to play in the OHL or any other league. So, just keeping your confidence up and keep working hard is definitely a big thing for that. You know, you can't give up once you're not drafted, or else. I mean, there it goes, you know. It's fast as you were put in the game. So I think definitely just keep working hard if you're not drafted, and work to make the league.
Well, listen, you're a very driven and hardworking guy. This is a podcast all about hockey prospects. And I want to ask you one final question. That's about one of your teammates who's up for the draft this year, Ivan Lodnia, who plays with the Erie Otters on your squad. What can you tell our listeners about him?
Oh, he's a great player. You know, he's really smart. Good on his skates. I think he's a really good skater. He's really good side to side. And I think he's one of the hardest working guys I've seen. You know, he's on the ice a lot more. He'll go on the ice before workout in the morning, and then also at practice. So he's working to get better, and he's a really good player and really skilled. And I think a lot of people will be excited about him.
All right, there you go. Right from scout Alex DeBrincat's mouth, Ivan Lodnia is legit. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Congratulations on the CHL Player of the Week honors, and certainly on signing your first pro contract. It looks great on you, Alex. Continued success.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Alex DeBrincat of the Erie Otters, draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, signing his entry-level deal on Monday with that storied franchise. And once again, he is shooting the lights out in the OHL. Back-to-back 51-goal seasons, and he is aiming for a third. That is an unbelievable achievement, should that young man actually hit it. From Alex DeBrincat, we'll turn our attention to other prospects, guys that have yet to be drafted, and how are teams doing with their organizational depth? Let's hear from Ryan Wagman. Please be joined now by the managing editor of Hockey Prospectus. He is Ryan Wagman, based out of Illinois, formerly in Toronto. He covers off a number of different areas, of which the USHL and the NCAA are two of them. We'll get to the prospectus guide here in a couple of moments. But Ryan, first of all, thanks so much for joining me. I wanted to get your thoughts. We talked at the opening of this podcast about, you know, this being the year that the USHL really sort of plants a flag in it. You know, there'll be three players from the USHL selected in the first round. There'll be Shane Bowers, Eli Tolvanen will go as well. And there's Casey Mittelstadt, who's a fascinating player, certainly high skilled. And a couple of scouts that I've talked to said, we love this guy. Fantastic player. We just wish he wasn't going back to high school. I know Riley Tufte did it last year. He still ended up getting drafted in the first round by the Dallas Stars. But when I say the name Casey Mittelstadt, Ryan, what comes to your mind?
A lot of the things that you just mentioned. He really is a fantastic player to watch. He's a great skater, very shifty. He can go east, west, north, south. You know, he maneuvers his way into and out of trouble almost, you know, blindly. Very escapable, great puck skills. You know, just a high end, quick hands. He's very dangerous with the puck. He holds onto it very well, so he's good at protecting the puck. Even though he's not necessarily the biggest guy, he is kind of stocky and he's very strong. You know, but he's also got a game that will need some fleshing out before he's ready for the pros. You know, one of the things I see a lot with Mittelstadt, and it happens a lot when you have really, really high-end guys, not just in the USHL, but also in the OHL and other junior leagues, where they're so much better than their peers, than their teammates, that they will often try to, you know, take on the game on, dominate the shift on their own. So, you know, Mittelstadt will kind of carry the puck for long stretches of time, and there might not be a great option for him or an amazing option, but he will, he'll end up kind of, you know, losing a shift just because he didn't really think his teammate was in a better position, even though it might have been, or was not in an optimal position, even though he might have been in a better position at that moment. And that's when we say, you know, we wish he wasn't going back to Minnesota for high school. That's something that I think will be even harder for him to work on at that level.
It, the USHL is a fascinating league. You know, I can recall once upon a time we would sort of look at it around the draft and say, oh, well, that's cute. They got a couple of guys in the draft, and certainly in the later rounds. And then as the years went on, and all of a sudden, hey, look, Trevor Lewis from Des Moines, he pops in the first. Like every, it seemed that every couple of years, the league would send another player higher and higher into the draft. But you mentioned the OHL as well. And I'm wondering, since you've covered both leagues, what's the difference between the two? The OHL has sort of always been considered, in a lot of scouting circles, that ultimate hothouse for player development. How do you compare the way the game is played in the OHL versus the way the game is played in the USHL?
Certainly, it is an interesting question. When I first moved down here, it's one that I tried to figure out as soon as I could, because, you know, that would give me a kind of a way to measure what I was seeing. And what I've kind of picked up on in, you know, two seasons of watching it here pretty regularly is that at the high end, the players, the top players in the USHL could very easily dominate in the OHL or, you know, the other CHL leagues as well. You know, this year you already mentioned, when we talked about Mittelstadt, and you mentioned Bowers and Tolvanen, and both of those would be very, very good players in the CHL. You know, last year we had Tufte, we had, you know, your NTTP guys, Clayton Keller and Kiefer Bellows as well. You know, those guys could easily play in the CHL, and they do not, you know, they do not need to be ashamed of the top end there. Where you really get a difference is when you get to the depth players. While even in the depth players, in, you know, in a good CHL team, you'd still get guys who could potentially be pro prospects. Maybe not now. Maybe they're, you know, they're still underagers. But you do have guys who have really good hockey skills, and those guys would play a higher role in the USHL than the lower-end guys in the USHL. A lot of the lower-end players in the USHL, and by lower-end I mean, you know, your fourth line forwards, your third-pairing defensemen, some of the goalies, although goalies are actually quite good, but some of those depth players are really gearing up for NCAA work, and the NCAA will in many cases be the, you know, the peak of their hockey careers. And whereas, you know, in the OHL, the Quebec League, the WHL, there is more, there are more gems to be found in the bottom, you know, the bottom half of the rosters. But the top end, there's really a lot of comparison. And I think, and I did mention goalies briefly, when it comes to goaltenders, often and lately we're seeing this in the draft too, you're getting more goalies drafted out of the USHL than are being drafted out of all three leagues in the CHL combined in some cases.
No, it's true, and there's a various number of reasons for that around the CHL, and that's probably a topic for another podcast, but your point is well made. I want to talk about the Prospect Guidebook. This is a wonderful document, and I'm addicted to it, and I find myself going back to it countless times throughout my week. The Hockey Prospectus 2016-17 Prospect Guidebook. Describe in your own words how you put this together and what you're trying to achieve.
So I think I'll start with the second question first. But what we were trying to achieve is a way of taking all of, you know, all the scouting information that you get, the views and the impressions that players make on us when we watch them. And I don't do this on my own. I mean, we have a team of, it was, I think, 11 guys last year covering pretty much the entire world, you know, focusing on their geographical regions. But we tried to take a way of making more uniform the different ways I would look at a player in the USHL versus our guy in the OHL and the WHL and Sweden and Finland and Russia and Switzerland and wherever these you know, these prospect watchers were, to have a way of making what we see talk to one another so that we can adequately rate a guy from one end, one area to another area. So what we did was I adapted what's called in baseball the 20/80 scouting system.
Yep.
Which is a way of looking at a prospect across the player's various attributes. And in for skaters, we look at skating, shooting, puck skills, smarts, which basically we kind of lump in everything that's off the puck, and physicality. and we give them a grade from 20 to 80, 20 being what you would find in a, you know, men's beer league, and 80 being the best you've ever seen, like Crosby or Gretzky or whatever in a different category. And 50 being kind of an NHL average, so like a decent third line forward or a number five defender. And we watch players as much as we can, and until we get to the point where we're comfortable putting a number on what we think they can be at that given attribute. And then talking to a number of contacts we have in the industry, you know, scouts and executives, we came up with a way of weighting each characteristic depending on what position the player played. So, you know, a player's skating might be more valuable, say, as a winger than it would be as a center. But at a center, you're looking more at puck skills and smarts than you might be for the winger. And a defender, you're looking kind of for smarts and a bit more on the physicality side and whatnot. And goalies have another set of characteristics that we look at as well.
Mm-hmm.
And once we established that system, and we kind of finalized it around this time last year, we tried to watch every single prospect, either who was already drafted or signed to an ELC or was eligible for last summer's draft, and watch them enough until we can get a grade on all of them. And I think we covered pretty much like at least 95% of the drafted and signed prospects and around 90% of the guys who ended up being drafted.
So then, to take that one step further, based on your criteria, did the draft fall as it should have, from Matthews to Laine to Dubois to Puljujärvi all the way down?
There were some discrepancies that I would have done things a little bit differently. For example, and I can, you know, brag about it now, we did have Chychrun much higher than he went.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at my opening up our big draft board that we put up last year. So yeah, we started off with Matthews and Laine, then Puljujärvi, and we had Chychrun at number four. You know, other guys were kind of in their tier. Like, I don't think Dubois was really the third best prospect, but he wasn't a horrible prospect by any means. He just thought that, you know, either Puljujärvi or Chychrun or Alex Nylander would have been a little bit of a better pick at that spot. Beyond that, though, a lot of the draft went similar to what we had. There were guys that we knew wouldn't get drafted as highly as we thought they were, such as Alex DeBrincat, who we actually had as a mid-first-round pick. Mm-hmm. He lasted till the second round in Chicago, and as we can see what he's doing now with Erie, they're pretty happy with that, you know, with getting him there. You know, and a few other guys that we might have had higher. I like Wade Allison better than the consensus. I think I like Trent Frederick better than anybody who published a list, but he ended up being drafted exactly where I had him, which is nice.
Well, if I can pause on that, that's because I talked to someone in Boston about that, and I kind of said, well, that's a, you know, I haven't seen Trent Frederick pop up on many, you know, a couple, you know, of course, yours being one of them, lists that would have him in the first round. And this person said, you know, we had this idea that we could get him in the second, but then we got some intel that Anaheim was going to take him with their second first-round pick, which is 30th overall. Turned out to be Sam Steele from Regina after Frederick went to Boston. He said, if we didn't get that intel, we probably would have passed on Frederick and got him in the second round. What makes him attractive to you, Trent Frederick?
For me with Frederick, I saw a player, even though he wasn't the most offensive player last year with the USNTDP, he showed that he does have offensive skill, but he was being used in a role that didn't maximize that. But also he had really, really high-end puck, hockey smarts. His hockey IQ was not necessarily off the charts, but he was a very heady player. He read plays exceptionally well. And then beyond that, he had a very good shot release, good velocity on his wrist shot, nice backhander. But it was mostly with the way he reads the game, anticipates the game, what we'd call like a high-floor player. You know, he will make it in a decent role. He might not be a top six, but getting a guy to play as a third-line center at the back end of the first round is actually pretty decent value.
You mentioned that you had Chychrun much higher. How did your defense rankings go last season? What was the order?
So they were very close. You know, I don't want to say that when we had him higher, it was like you know, a huge gap. It was when the way our system works, when you get, you know, you add up all the character attributes and you put them through our formula, we get what we call an OFP, which is what stands for overall future projection. And, you know, if a guy is within 1 point or so of another guy, it's almost a toss-up. And, you know, there's a lot of subjectivity here. We're not just saying who had the most, you know, points per game or something like that. So Chychrun we had at number four, and his score was a 64.5, which is actually really, really high. Uelevi was next at 62. That ranked him seventh overall. Excuse me. And Sergachev was 14 at 59.25. And it was very much with them all. It was very close either way. Sergachev was definitely closer to Ualevi, but we really thought Chychrun's physical skills, his tools, his skating ability, his shot, his size also, would just made him that much more of an attractive area, room for growth. I didn't think he would be maybe ready right away, but we did think that he had the higher ceiling of anybody. He reminded me of more like a Hedman or a Doughty. A kind of, breed of player.
Where did you have Charlie McAvoy? He's an interesting one.
Oh, I like McAvoy. I like McAvoy a lot. Actually, I had him before Sergachev. I skipped over him in the ranking. We had him 11th.
Wow, okay.
He is, what I like about him, and, maybe this is just me, but I love it when a defenseman, when he's, you don't need to play a big physical game, but when you do, he's explosive.
Yeah.
When he hits a guy, the guy is hit. He goes down, and he's also got good wheels. He makes good plays. He reads the game well. And what he did at the NCAA, I think he was the youngest player in NCAA last year.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Or if not the youngest, one of the handful of youngest.
On his team, he was certainly.
He was just very impressive to watch. He really read the game at a level that's much more mature than you would expect. The NCAA is often guys who are 23, 24 years old, and for him to do what he did at 18. Really impressed me, because it would have been impressive if he did it at 22.
I want to get back to the guidebook here for a couple of seconds in the couple of minutes that we have left with you, Ryan. You mentioned the 20-80 rule. How many players get close to that 80 number?
Nobody gets close to that 80 number. Our top prospect last year was Austin Matthews, which is not a huge surprise.
Yeah.
And his number, I'm just scrolling to it now, here we go, 67.25.
All right.
Which means that's a player who has all-star ability. There are only three guys who got above a 65, or 65 and up, rather. Matthews, Laine, and Sebastian Aho. So 65 and up is, you're basically looking at an all-star. 60 to 65 is somebody who is, a first-line player. 55 to 60 is like a top six, top half of the lineup. And 50 to 55 is somebody who, as we think, has definite NHL potential. Below 50... it is more, he could play a role, or he'd be an up-and-down guy, but we don't have as high hopes for somebody who gets a below 50 final score.
Aho is a fascinating guy, and I'll tell you, around the World Cup this year at the Air Canada Centre, I was there every day doing stuff for Facebook Live, and 9 times out of 10, when we talked about prospects on the horizon for teams, most of the conversation came to Sebastian Aho, and in a lot of ways, it almost seemed as if he was the player's player. The guy that all the players looked at and said, wow, this is a hockey player. What do you like about Sebastian Aho?
So our Finnish scout loved Aho last year. So what we liked about him, though, he got really high grades for his skating. He has an explosive acceleration. His shooting was very strong, kind of surprisingly, because he's kind of a small guy. His puck skills were, and his hockey IQ were almost as high as you can get. Not an 80, but really close. But great puck skills. You like to see a guy who can play with other high-end players. And at the World Juniors, as you mentioned, he was playing with Laine and Puljujarvi most of the time, proving that he's not just kind of guiding, other guys, but he's really the driving force on a group of guys who are also really, really high-end guys. And the physicality, while he's not, he's not big, he avoids areas where he can get out-muscled, and he uses what he has wisely.
You mentioned Patrick Laine, and at the time of this recording, he just went off for a hat trick last night. Another one for the Winnipeg Jets. I remember talking to someone before the season, and I said, compare Laine and Puljujärvi. Outside of the obvious, one is great when the play sets up, the other is great off the rush. And he said, make no mistake about it, there is a world of difference between the two when it comes to quality. The Winnipeg Jets got themselves as close to a superstar as you could possibly get in that draft outside of Austin Matthews. And he said, don't put Puljujärvi and Laine A together, because there is a huge chasm between the two. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. Sorry, we had, the grades for the two were fairly similar at the end of the day, but the difference between the two is that Laine is going to show what he is, a much more offensive player. He's going to produce much more offense. His shot is as high as we could possibly rank it. I couldn't give a guy an 80 really on anything before they get to the NHL. It's almost impossible. That's Hall of Fame. But we had three of our scouts watch him pretty extensively, and he got 170 and 275s. His puck skills are also very high-end. Puljujarvi probably is about the same when it comes to puck skills, and Puljujarvi's more, you're going to get the hockey IQ. He's going to be more the two-way player. Puljujarvi's, I think, a better skater if you're looking just at pure technique and his speed. Yep. And, you know, physicality, they're kind of similar. But the shot that Laine has is it's a game-breaker. You know, it changes things. And I don't think Puljujarvi has any one skill, that can change the tone of the game, that can take over a shift. Laine can do that, and as we see, I mean, he already is.
All right, early candidates with a couple of guys for the Calder Trophy already. Ryan, quickly, as we let you go, how do people get the guide, the 2016-17 Hockey Prospectus Prospect Guidebook?
So it's available through the hockeyprospectus.com website. There is a link at the top of the page. We have like a menu bar. If you go to a 2016-17 Prospect Guidebook, it leads you to where you can purchase it. It's available right now for $11.99. And we're also throwing in our projections, our Vokoda projections, that tell you how we think NHL veterans are going to do this year. But for $11.99, you're getting the whole, every team has a chapter. You got a minimum of 20 players per team ranked and discussed, with a few, you know, fun lists in the back of the book as well.
It's great. It's 328 pages long, so that's full value for your $12. That's outstanding. Ryan, listen, thanks so much for stopping by. We'll check in regular, pal.
Thank you. Take care.
That was Ryan Wagman, managing editor of Hockey Prospectus. And from there, I want to talk a little bit about the Canada-Russia series. The series now tied 1-1. The Western Hockey League losing the first game 3-2 in overtime. They won Tuesday night 4-1. Tyler Benson was outstanding. And someone who knows that is our lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. That is Sam Cosentino, who joins me now as he's about to get on a plane to make his way back to Ontario. Sam, how are you today?
Yeah, Jeff, doing great. Pretty awesome couple of games so far. So it's nice to see that the Russians brought over a competitive team. Last year, that definitely wasn't the case. So this year we've got a good one, and I think the series is going to be one that goes right to the end.
Yeah, and the one player, when you mentioned the Russians, the one that personally and selfishly I wanted to have a real good look at, and so far, man, am I ever impressed, is Klim Kostin, who's draft eligible this year. What are your thoughts on the big Russian four that can beat you with size, he can beat you with skill? Some scouts, as I've mentioned before, have some issues with, you know, does he have that next gear when it comes to speed? But, man, this guy's been dynamic in the two games in the Western League so far.
No, Jeff, I'm like you, just so lucky to be able to get those live viewings, and there's going to be six of them, so you'll be able to get a real good book on a player when you see him that many times consecutively, especially with all the travel and some of the adversity that the Russians are going to face. But he's been awesome. He's done everything and more than I expected. It's funny, I talked to some scouts in the scouts room last night, and they really, really have liked this play. They said it was fantastic in the summer. He's come over here and has done nothing different to me to show me that he shouldn't be probably a top 10 guy. Size, the skating's fine. I'm sure, you know, as you get older, that's something you can work on as well.
Yeah.
But, the ability to drive the net, protect the puck, stand up to bigger, older players, apply himself physically, all those elements have been part of his game, and he's been really, really good. I thought it was a bit of a dip in his game last night. I thought in game number one he was just dynamic, just fantastic.
Yeah, he was, and it is interesting too. You know, he started out the season playing in the KHL with Dynamo, but saw really limited minutes, really limited ice time. And, you know, if you just look at his stats, you say to yourself, well, there's nothing there because there's no statistics. Where are the goals? Where's the assists? He was outstanding at the Ivan Hlinka. As you mentioned, he has all the skills. He has all the tools. It's probably just a matter of, they weren't going to give him an opportunity in the KHL, so probably better that he gets sent down a tier to essentially the equivalent of the American League for the Russians.
Well, you know what? I think the Russian system in general, it seems to be pretty geared towards the national program. So, yeah, of course, if your guys aren't getting big minutes in the KHL, they need to play. It's like any young player. You know, I've had that discussion with Pavel Karnikov, who was playing with the Calgary Hitmen for a couple of years. He went back and signed with a KHL team because he thought he was going to get big minutes there. Now, that's not happened. So is that going to be necessarily good for his development from the Flames' perspective? Probably not. But in the case of a player who's homegrown, staying with his home club and then staying with the AHL equivalent affiliate, if you will, I think it's a good move. The other thing is that I think, at least in Coffin's case, they're looking at a way in which he can perform probably at a higher level with more leverage. I mean, it's playing on a national team in an under-20 and an under-19 scenario. So he really gets this opportunity to come here and do that. I think he's going to get strong consideration to play for the World Junior team, although, Valerie Bregan is not a guy who really likes to take young players. But this guy's going to make a case.
What did you make of Nikita Papagayev, his head coach of the Moose Jaw Warriors, behind the bench for Team Canada, that is former NHLer Tim Hunter? What did you make of Papagayev's game?
Pretty good. Didn't get himself into any positions to shoot the puck, and I was expecting to see a little bit more of that. That's something that I would have liked to see out of his game, because I've heard so much about that. I think he only had one shot in the first game, and then game number two, maybe a shot there. So there's a guy that, when you get the puck on a stick, you want him to fire the puck. Mind you, Team Russia in general didn't have many shots, 21 of them in the first game, so he did get one of those. But I thought he was okay. He didn't wow me in any one particular phase of the game. He is a big body guy. There's definitely things that you can see in his game, and there were some flashes there. But over the course of those two games, he left a little something to be desired in my eyes.
Tyler Benson was outstanding yesterday, and that's someone that you talked about a lot last year in his draft year. I mean, plagued by injuries, Vancouver had, I mean, if you think of a team that had more drama last year in the Western Hockey League than Vancouver, I'd like to meet the team, because it seemed as if every day or two there was a new issue around the Giants. He started off real good and dovetailed that into a real nice game too yesterday with Team Canada. Your thoughts on Tyler Benson so far?
Yeah, you know what? It's been interesting. I mean, the injuries have been well documented. The other thing that sometimes goes unnoticed is he's played for five different coaches. Now, that in itself is challenging, especially when you come into the league as one of the prospective greatest prospects in a long time in the Western Hockey League. But coming to Benson this year, getting to play for a new coach once again, but being healthy, he's gotten off to a good start. Didn't like his game much in game one, but I thought he was really good in yesterday's game. Carried the puck, carried it with speed once he got going. I think the first few steps are a bit of an issue for Tyler. Shoots the puck well, has good vision, and a really smart player. I love the pass he made to Wagner on Wagner's goal, where he just kind of chipped it into an area. Mm-hmm. Didn't put it too far, but put a nice touch on it for Wagner to be able to catch up to it and take it the distance and score. So he's going to be one of those guys who's a really interesting study moving forward with Hockey Canada here. They're likely going to take between 30 and 32 players to their selection camp, and he's going to be right on the fringe of that group.
Do you have a thought on Mason Shaw? He's one of the players, he plays with Medicine Hat. He was invited due to injuries. Nolan Patrick not there, Dylan Dubé, Brett Howden. He's tied for the league in the Western Hockey League for scoring, along with Sam Steele of Regina. Decent showing at the Ivan Hlinka as well. Not the highest rated prospect, but he is someone that we should probably pay attention to. Do you have a thought on Mason Shaw?
He's Alex DeBrincat light. That's how it's in. Similar size, has no problem going to dirty areas, can be a little chippy, wants to send a message that he can play with bigger players with no physical issue whatsoever. Shoots it, really good quick release and a pretty hard shot. I think he surprised the Russian goaltenders on a couple of occasions. Moves the puck well, is speedy, darts in and out of areas. No, I really like him. You know what, Jeff, he's a lot like a bunch of Medicine Hat Tigers we've seen of that ilk. Over the last couple of years, you go back to Curtis Volk, I think in the 12-13 season, maybe a 100-point guy, if not really close. Curtis Sanford, Trevor Cox, Cole Sanford. And so you get these young guys who are 5'9", 160 pounds. Next thing you know, you look up and they're leading the league and scoring at 100-point guys.
That's Medicine Hat Tigers. We shift now to the Ontario Hockey League for games 3 and 4. Thursday it is North Bay, and then on Monday it is Hamilton. And of particular interest for players that are draft eligible, we'll get a chance to see Gabe Vilardi, Owen Tippett, Nick Hague, Marcus Phillips. Any one of those four specifically you want to have your eyes on over these couple of games?
Well, Vilardi would be that guy for me, for sure. I mean, he got hurt, and so he couldn't participate for Canada, on the big hit from Michael Rasmussen. So at the under-18s, everyone said to me that he was the best player in the camp there. So he's a guy that I definitely want to keep my eyes on. And, the OHL in this event is in a very unique situation in the fact that it wraps its two games around its regular season schedule across the weekend. And that's why you see two pretty different rosters when it comes to games one and two. You know, teams don't want their players playing in so many games in such a short period of time. And so what you see on Thursday isn't necessarily what you're going to see on Monday, although in this particular event there will be some carryover, especially with the forward group. So it's what Team OHL has the option to do in that situation is be able to give its draft-eligible players, its younger players, an opportunity to play at this high level. So, you know, the benefactor, you know, the benefit side to the wrapping of the schedule around the weekend is the fact that the young guys get an opportunity to perform these events. And so if they don't, you know, maybe make their mark this time around, then Hockey Canada definitely has an eye and a bit of a book on them moving forward to international events in the future.
As you mentioned, the venue shifting to North Bay and then Hamilton. I guess it's just one piece of the puzzle, but how much stock does Hockey Canada place on evaluations for the WJC in this tournament?
Well, it's huge. It's huge this year more so than any other year, Jeff, because you look at all the guys that are eligible to come back that are still in the NHL and still playing pretty well. You know, it's the way Marner's playing, he's not likely to come back. The way Konechny's playing, he's not likely to come back. They'll probably keep one of either Strome or Kraus. They'll probably keep one of Beauvillier or Barzal. So, you know, you might get two or three of those guys back. What that means, essentially, is that there's a lot more open spots than I think anyone in Hockey Canada would have anticipated if you had to ask them, you know, at the end of August. And that's what makes these games so special, because you get the opportunity to play against a really good Russian team, and it's a good measuring stick as to what those players are going to be able to handle: the physicality, the speed, you know, the pace of the game, moving the puck and making decisions quickly. All those things have to come out, you know, in your game in order to be able to be competitive here against the Russians. So it's much more of an evaluatory tool this year, I would say, than it has been in years past, just because of the number of spots that I think most people are anticipating to be open.
We asked you about, you know, which prospect was eligible for the draft this year that you're most looking forward to in these two games in the OHL, just in general, because, you know, I know you wanted to have a closer look at Noah Juulsen in the Western Hockey League two games as well. Is there someone from the OHL that's really caught Sam Cosentino's eye, or you want to, you know, see where he's at right now in the OHL, maybe not a draft eligible guy?
Two guys. The first one would be Anthony Cirelli. When I went to Plymouth in the summer and watched Team Canada play there, he was without a doubt, and that's including all the Rockstar guys that were at that camp, the most consistent player, both ends of the ice, winning draws, skating, shooting the puck, really responsible defensively and creating chances in the offensive zone. He'd be one of them for me. The other guy would be Giovanni Smith. You know, Jeff, I know you watched him at the BioSteel camp, and that's, you know, not much of a measuring stick. You know, some people might still call it shinny hockey, but it's competitive, and it's against older, experienced, established NHL veterans. He performed really, really well there. I talked to Jeff Finley, the head scout there for Detroit last night, about Giovanni Smith, and, you know, he went to camp and wasn't asserting himself physically, and I guess someone had to talk to him. He started throwing his body around a little bit, and people, and maybe Giovanni himself realized that he's a little stronger than maybe he even knew. So I'm really looking forward to watching him play, because I look at him as a guy who can come into this event. You know, Hockey Canada knows about him. He's going to play for the under-18s if he wasn't suspended. But he has a real opportunity to make his mark here with his speed, with his physicality, and maybe show off some of the good hands that people don't think that he has, because he's a bigger, stronger player.
And his brother Jamel just scored his first two NHL goals for the Stars
really
the other night. So it's a nice little touch for the family there. Sam, I know you got a plane to catch. We'll let you go. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. We look forward to games 3 and 4 in the Canada-Russia series Thursday in North Bay, Monday in Hamilton. Thanks, Sam.
Okay, great, Jeff. Thanks. Take care.
There you go, Sam Cosentino, who joins us on each and every podcast. And that's the podcast for this time around. Thanks so much for joining us. I want to thank our producer, Sam McKee, as always. I want to thank Sam Cosentino, our lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. A reminder, Game 3, Canada-Russia series, Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern. You can watch that one on Sportsnet. I want to thank Ryan Wagman of Hockey Prospectus and Alex DeBrinket, who, as we mentioned, signed with the Chicago Blackhawks this week. His entry-level deal, congratulations there, and was also the CHL Player of the Week after putting up an ungodly 11 points in 3 games. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. Don't forget, you can always check out our list of the top 31 prospects. Our November rankings are out. Visit sportsnet.ca/top31. We'll talk to you next time.
This is your one-stop shop for scouting reports, interviews, and roundtables. It's the Prospect Project 2017 with Jeff Merrick. Who you need to know and why, all season long.